Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to La Liga Lowdown for our weekend recap of the Match Day 23 weekend. We've got something a little bit different this week. I'm Sam Leverage, but our usual co-hosts, Matt Clark and Rory Barlow, are away. They're in Barcelona for the big game there. So we've got Tom Harris standing in. Thanks for joining us, Tom.
Hi, Sam. Thanks for having me on. Really looking forward to it today. And we've got plenty to get stuck into, so I think it's going to be a really great episode.
Yeah, what did you make of the weekend's action?
Yeah, typically, you know, really, really good weekend again in La Liga. Obviously, the Barcelona game, probably where we're going to go first here from Matt and Rory, was the standout game. But we've had, you know, drama at Sevilla, couldn't quite close the gap at the top with Real Madrid. We've had Villarreal pulling off a fantastic result. And we've had, you know, a lot of drama in the relegation fight as well. So, yeah, really, really exciting weekend. I look forward to getting stuck in.
Plenty to cover. So let's start off with that. Then let's hand over to Matt and Rory, who are in Barcelona. They're joined by Alan Fiheli. And so I've heard that in between being at bars with drum sets, and I've seen a few dodgy pictures of Matt Clark, but in between they managed to find room to have a beer and discuss the action of a thrilling game. And here, let's start off just with some of the commentary from Jordi Alba's spectacular shin volley, which leveled the game up at the end.
En esta banda derecha con Adama y Hermoso ahí.
Adama quería meter para Ferran Torres, todavía peligro para Dani Alves, la mete para Jordi Alba de volea, tira. Gol, 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 tremenda, sí. No sé si quería prenderla de esta manera, pero le salió fenomenal con el exterior de la bota izquierda, la volea flojita por la escuadra izquierda de la portería de Oblak, marca Jordi Alba.
I'm here with Rory Barlow and Alan Fiheli, and we have had the fortune to watch an incredible game at Camp Nou today. We're just sitting in a terrace in Elborn district at the moment, having a beer, taking it all in after that incredible game. Rory, what were your thoughts to be there in person for that phenomenal match?
Well, first of all, it was absolutely fantastic to be back at Camp Nou. I'm sure, as you guys will attest to, I was pretty excited, maybe perhaps letting my emotions get the better of me at times, especially when Gil Manzano was being a protagonist. But yeah, it was fantastic to be back. It was great. Camp Nou on a big game, and the atmosphere wasn't stunning. It wasn't the best I've seen, but it was great to see so many people back in Camp Nou for a big occasion like that. And it was a fantastic match.
Alan, what were your thoughts? What were your takeaways?
It was a very interesting experience because it was my first time at Camp Nou as a spectator. I'd been there before doing a tour and stuff. I'd never been in the ground watching a football match there, and it was a brilliant football match to watch. It was a party that, so there were that.
Fantastic stuff. Yeah, we absolutely loved it this afternoon. As for the game itself, it was so dramatic. I mean, Atleti took the lead very early on, and then Barca responded really well. There was a fear that, oh, this could go flat very quickly, but Barca responded, didn't they?
Yeah, they really did, and I think that's probably the biggest takeaway for Barca from this, is that although there were imperfections in their game, and my word, watching them defend is a stressful experience if you're persuaded one way or the other, but they came through the adversity in this match, and I think especially in the first half they had a lot more pausa than they have had lately. They managed to get on the ball and control the game for parts of it. The second half they had to defend deep with a man less. They did have a two-goal advantage, but they actually managed to keep Atleti and limit them to a few chances, which was something different for Barca, because I think even when we've seen bits of Xavi's style coming into the play, we've seen tenets of the Barcelona game that he wants. We've not quite seen them come up with the big moments, and they did that today. They really did. And Alan, you mentioned Dani Alves. I've got to give it up to him, because in that first half, the way that he was trusted to essentially control the game, and he was the guy that was providing superiorities in the midfield for Barcelona and making sure that they had that control. He was all over the pitch, and as you saw when he ended up scoring a goal. It was a really big match for Barcelona emotionally, I think. I think if Xavi can find this and keep this kind of form going, then they'll be in good stead for the rest of the season.
Absolutely. Alan, it was a kind of frenetic experience, and the whistles for a period of about 3 or 4 minutes in that second half were deafening. I've never heard it like that before in any game I've been to. They were really getting behind the team and, you know, against the ref and trying to force their team to hold on. Do you think now that with this win, this solidifies their chances of getting fourth, and how do you see their season panning out?
Yeah, I think it's very important, because I think before this game, it had the potential to be a season-defining game for both Atletico and Barcelona, because obviously Atletico were a point ahead of Barca. They'd just beaten Valencia 3-2 last weekend, or the weekend before the international break, in quite dramatic fashion. So they were coming into a game in a high, you could argue. Similarly, Barca had played probably one of the worst games I've seen in recent times against Alaves, beat them 1-0 with a late Frenkie de Jong winner. But the nature of that victory, that they're turning these draws that were draws at the beginning of the season into wins, was significant for me. And I think that whatever team won today, if there was a winner, was going to use this game as a springboard of sorts for the rest of the season. Because, you know, I think that given Real Betis' form, and okay, they're not doing so well at the moment, losing to Villarreal, I think that it could genuinely be a straight fight between Barcelona and Atletico for the top four of the season. And I think that based on today, and based on the trajectory of each side and the way they're playing and performing, not just earning results, I really back Barcelona above Atletico, to be honest. I think that it's imperative that they get top four this season. I think they sanctioned the deal for Aubameyang, and also for Adama and for Dani and for Ferran as well, with the idea of getting them into the Champions League this season, get those goals coming quickly. And then in the summer, they can maybe take a step back and reevaluate how they're going to proceed in this project. But I think that for a team to be bonded with the support, and Xavi's team is a new team for sure, with the new faces, the new signings, you need days like this, you need evenings like this. It was the first game in Camp Nou in 50 days or something like that, 75,000 people in attendance, a lovely sunny Sunday evening in Barcelona, sun setting as the game progressed. I think it was very, very valuable that this happened. Obviously, when the second goal came in, when Luis Suarez got a goal back, there was a bit of nerves and there was a bit of tension towards the end. A couple of incidents with the referee. Daniel was sent off. Xavi Hernandez's brother was sent off as well. So it was tense for sure. And there was always danger that Barca could collapse if Atletico got a third goal. But they held firm. They showed a bit of mettle. They got the victory they needed. And they're now looking very, very good, with a better head-to-head record against Atletico as well, going into the final stretch of the season. So you'd expect it was a very good day's work for Xavi and his boys.
Superbly rounded up there, Alan. Quick word on Atleti, Rory. I think December 2012 was the last time they conceded four in La Liga. And yeah, again, we've said this many times this season, this is just doesn't seem like a Cholo and the only team, does it?
No, and it's the complete lack of or clarity of purpose that I think we touched on. We mentioned this before the game, that Jose Maria Jimenez pointed this out against Valencia after the game in a really good interview, where he said, yeah, this could be a point of inflection. It could be a turning point for us in our season after the Valencia game, but only if we get a result today. And although they did cause Barcelona some issues, especially in the first half, the total lack of certainty in the defence, you saw it with Jan Oblak. There was a point where he sort of controlled the ball on the goal line, and they almost lost the ball, lost the goal from that very play, where there's two defenders and the keeper there, and none of them knew what to do with the ball. And the space that's available in their box at the minute is just absolutely crazy, from coming from a side and a manager that we've seen sort of build a European behemoth at times on a defence.
Yeah, it's very interesting times for them. And Alan, you touched on it off air, how maybe it's time for a change of cycle. Would you like to just explore that thought a bit more?
Yeah, well, first of all, I would never call for Simeone to get sacked, because I think he's an absolute genius, and I think what he's done at Atletico is one of the most outstanding achievements of any football coach in the 21st century, if not before that even. But I do think sometimes there's a reason that managers don't last 10 years in a job anymore. And it's nobody's fault. It's not Atletico. It's not Simeone. It's maybe sometimes you need a fresh voice and the vibe from the outside. I'm not a keen adversary of Atletico. I don't live in Madrid. I don't follow them week by week. But I think that the atmosphere at the club at the moment isn't very good. It needs changing. The individual defenders aren't of the standard they were in the past. You have the likes of Luis Suarez, who's at the end of his career. Joao Felix is at the beginning of his, but it's not really taking off either. So there's a weird kind of, you know, halfway house at the moment, because they aren't playing the kind of cavalier, swashbuckling football that the signings they made would suggest they're trying to. But they're also not playing the kind of, you know, grinta, deep defending, tough to beat style of football that they became famous for either. So they're kind of falling between two stools for me. And at the moment, it's kind of hard to imagine that they can turn this around in the next couple of years and embark on a new and exciting project, because the way things are going at the moment, it doesn't seem to be possible. But I don't know. Like I said, I never call for Simeone's head ever, because I think he's a genius. I think he's a phenomenal coach. But I think sometimes maybe you do need to have a new start elsewhere, for both for Atletico and for him as well.
Yeah, some very interesting questions for Atleti as the season concludes. Big games in Europe, of course, coming up. But we'll leave it there for now, and I'll hand back to Sam. Thank you very much.
Thanks to Matt, Rory and Alan for that conversation there from Barcelona. But let's move on to the rest of the action at the top of the table now. So we have seen the gap open up at the top of La Liga. It's 6 points now, and that came after Real Madrid beat Granada 1-0. It wasn't pretty, but they did get the win. Tom, what did you make of that performance? I mean, obviously without Karim Benzema, without Casemiro, without a few key players, they did manage to grind out the win. And Granada, not the toughest test, but Real Madrid needed that win after going out to Athletic in the Copa del Rey in midweek, right?
Yeah, they definitely needed that result. We've seen with Real Madrid, obviously they are 6 points clear at the top of the table, as you just said, but they have dropped points this season to the likes of Getafe and Elche and Cadiz. So they do struggle against these kind of lower block teams, and Granada coming today, I think they're a bit more positive than the likes of Cadiz, who went to Santiago Bernabeu and, you know, put 10 men behind the ball. But they're a similar kind of side that, you know, you'd expect them to be beating well. And, you know, Real Madrid did struggle in the end, just about got through with that spectacular strike from Asensio. But yeah, I mean, I think that the big, you know, talking point today was the absence of Vinicius Junior, the absence of Karim Benzema. And, you know, they ended up playing Isco as a kind of, well, kind of false nine, but not quite, you know, performing as perhaps Ancelotti envisioned him to. So yeah, I mean, without those players, they did struggle. So I think, as you know, the season goes on, Sevilla, as we'll mention later on, have dropped points, so they have got a bit of a cushion. But it's, you know, vitally important that Vinicius Junior and Karim Benzema keep fit, because without them, as we've just seen today, they do look a lot less powerful up front. But yeah, really important result in the end.
Yeah, and obviously in midweek, chasing a result, and Gareth Bale, Eden Hazard and Luka Jovic all stayed on the bench. On Sunday night, the same thing again. Gareth Bale stayed on the bench, but Luka Jovic and Eden Hazard did come on as subs before the goal was scored. So while the score was still 0-0, I mean, why do you think it is that Ancelotti is just so unconvinced by those three attackers? I mean, they're worth €263 million in transfer fees. I mean, why are they not being given more opportunities in the absence of Benzema and Vinicius?
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? If you think of all the hype when Gareth Bale was signed, you know, it was a couple of years after Ronaldo had been signed for a similar kind of price. Everyone, obviously, the way he was playing at Tottenham just before he moved to Real Madrid, everyone thought he was going to be kind of, you know, Ronaldo's, you know, heir, but it's just not worked out like that at all. I think, you know, with Hazard and Bale, that, you know, they've not had a lot of game time. I think it probably was a sensible decision tonight to go with Rodrigo and Asensio. I just find it baffling that Luka Jovic isn't getting any game time, you know, when they literally don't have another striker available. As I just mentioned, they were playing Isco up front, and he didn't seem to, you know, really know what he was, a bit harsh to say he didn't know what he was doing, but he didn't seem to play the false nine role, you know, as was expected. And Luka Jovic, you know, when he came in, he got the winner against Real Sociedad when Karim Benzema had his little injury. So I thought he might have had a chance tonight, but no. But yeah, it really is incredible. I think the main thing, yeah, with Hazard and Bale is probably just down to injuries and kind of match fitness. But I'm very surprised that he didn't utilise Luka Jovic today.
Yeah, and over in Pamplona, a 0-0 draw on Saturday night, which means that this gap could open up to 6 points. I mean, Sevilla haven't been great of late, but is this the end of their title challenge, or can they still claw things back?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's an issue of clawing things back now for Sevilla. I think, you know, they can win all they want, but I just think Real Madrid are just going to just carry on grinding out these results as they did today. But yeah, I mean, El Ciudad is you know, historically a very difficult place to go, but Osasuna weren't in the best form. They only had 2 wins in their last 13 games going into this game, so it was a really big opportunity. And that penalty miss from Joan Rakitic right at the death is, you know, it's going to be really, really bitter pill to take for Sevilla. They dominated possession, but, you know, they just didn't create enough chances, enough clear-cut chances. So I think it was a really, really big opportunity missed. And yeah, I can't see Sevilla, you know, getting back into this title race now. But at least, you know, they've not finished in the top two in La Liga for well over 50 years. So it would be a great achievement if they could finish second. But as long as they hang about, I think they'll be relatively happy with this season, how this season's gone.
Yeah, so let's move on and take a look at the race for the European spots, the top four and the top six, of course. And so one of the teams lower down, Rayo Vallecano, went to Vigo to face Celta, and Celta won 2-0 in that one. Valencia then hosted Real Sociedad, a 0-0 draw, which was a hard-fought tie. And then one which you enjoyed in particular, Tom, was a 2-0 win for Villarreal against Betis. I mean, how impressive were Villarreal? I mean, Betis, of course, have won the last 3 games by scoring 4 goals. So to then fail to score at home against Villarreal is some change.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant from Villarreal. It was really well organised, really well disciplined. And I think it kind of sums Villarreal up that the 2 away wins that they've had all season were away to Real Sociedad and Real Betis, you know, 2 of the hardest places to go in La Liga. And those were the 2 games that they somehow managed to win. But yeah, it was very, very impressive. I think, you know, if you look at the form that front four have been in for Real Betis, they really limited them to not very much. Canales just couldn't really get into the game. Fekir was struggling as well. But yeah, I mean, the only downside to that result was Gerard Moreno going off, because, you know, it looked fairly innocuous. Nothing really seemed to happen to him. But when he was on the bench, he looked very, very upset, kind of throwing his boots onto the ground. But yeah, it's generally looking quite good. We've got Real Madrid coming up next in La Ceramica, but then a run of games that we're expected to win. So hopefully we can maintain that European push.
And just one quick last word before we head into a quick break. Tom, I mean, Real Sociedad, they've gone 3 games without a goal for the first time under Imanol Aguatil. The first time since October 2018 was the last time that they had that. And they've only got 1 win in their last 10 in La Liga. I mean, they're currently sitting in 7th, level on points with Villarreal, and only 1 point behind Atletico Madrid. But do you think they might fade away? I mean, they've got Athletic Club and Rayo not far behind them. Could one of those teams catch them?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure what's happened to Real Sociedad, because, you know, as we kind of said, you know, similar to last season, they started so, so well, and we were saying, oh, could they maybe, you know, mount a title charge, but obviously it just fades away to nothing. The main problem has been goal scoring. I think Oyarzabal was kind of the man they relied on, and he's not got a goal in quite a while now. I can't see them fading below Athletic Club and Rayo Vallecano. I think Rayo are going to start to struggle a bit now. You know, they've had their kind of purple patch. So I think they'll be okay in that regard. But yeah, really disappointing. And, you know, they really need this win against, you know, they've got a home game against Granada next weekend, just before the Basque Derby away at San Mamés. So it's really important, I think, that they win this game just to make sure the wheels don't completely fall off.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as you say, they were looking at a potential title challenge earlier on, and now they're close to the relegation zone than they are to Real Madrid at the top of La Liga. So let's head into a quick break then. Just bear with us, and then we will be back to discuss the relegation battle with some big and controversial fixtures there this weekend. So stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome back to our Match Day 23 podcast, looking at all of the action across the whole length of the La Liga table. We've covered the top half, but what about the bottom half? The bottom six all met and faced each other this weekend, starting on Friday night as Getafe faced Levante. Tom, a big win for Getafe, 3-0. I mean, how impressive were Getafe in that game?
Yeah, I mean, I went into this weekend kind of thinking that, you know, if all the home sides win, as they ended up doing, that we might already kind of know who's staying up and who's going down. Getafe more than the other two teams, because they already had a bit of a gap after what Kiki Sanchez Flores has done in the last couple of weeks. And now 7 points clear. And as we mentioned in our transfer window review spaces the other week, they've recruited really well. And yeah, I mean, I think the main thing is that under Jose Bordalas, Getafe was a horrible place to go and play, and it's starting to become that again under Kike Sanchez Flores, which I think is a really, really positive thing for them. You see, they've won their last four in a row there now at the Coliseum, including against Real Madrid. They've got 6 wins in a draw in their last seven. So yeah, I was really impressed. I was also really impressed by the depth as well, because Borja Mayoral came on towards the end and assisted that goal with a really, really nice run. So I think they've got depth, they've got a bit of momentum, and I think in Kike Sanchez Flores, they've got a manager who's really starting to stamp his authority on this side. So yeah, looking really good for them. Levante, on the other hand, you know, we've been saying it for a while now, I think this was the final nail in the coffin, unfortunately. So
yeah, 16 games left in this season, but they're already 12 points adrift from safety. Are they down already?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think they are. Again, as we mentioned in that Twitter spaces, it was, you know, they needed a big signing. They needed somebody to really, you know, shake it up, and they only brought in Martin Casares, who I just don't think is enough. And yeah, if you look at the difference, like I just said, Getafe bringing on Mayoral, bringing on Oscar Rodriguez, who could Levante really bring on when they were in a situation where they needed somebody? So yeah, I think, you know, they've not had the form, they've not had the consistency, and, you know, I think unfortunately that was the final nail in the coffin.
So let's move on to another one of the big games, and one of the results which surprised me a little bit, which was Mallorca 2-1. Two penalties for Mallorca, both of them pretty controversial, and Cadiz's president sent out a statement to Luis Rubiales asking him to sort it out, and his son was also in the tunnel and he was dismissed by the referee for telling him that he was shameless. I mean, what did you make of the two penalties? The first one for a pull on the arm, the second one for Ledesma, the goalkeeper, coming out and clattering someone as he collected the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to, you know, agree with the Cadiz president in that one, maybe not as strongly as he put it. But I do think that both the penalties were really soft. I think the first one, you know, it is a pullback. There is contact, but he does go down very, very easily for me. It's more the second one that I have a problem with, because it just isn't a penalty at all, in my opinion. Obviously, there's a lot of contacts. Ledesma does kind of collide with the player, but he goes up to punch a ball and he punches it. You know, he wins the ball. And so, yeah, if he misses it and then clatters the player, then fair enough. But, you know, he has to come out in that situation. He has to try and claim the ball, and he has done it. So for me, yeah, that's not a penalty at all. I mean, I don't know what you think about those two issues.
Yeah, no, I thought they were both very soft. And I think especially the first one, it's the kind of foul that you see given on the halfway line, but you don't often get to see given for a penalty. So I think it's kind of similar in both of those cases, and that anywhere else on the pitch, you wouldn't complain about it being a free kick. So can't complain too much about it being a penalty, but I can understand why Cadiz would feel hard done by. But I mean, for Mallorca, this was their first win since the game at the Wanda Metropolitana when they beat Atleti in December. I mean, do you think this is what they need to turn things around and kind of push on and stay up? Because they aren't in the bottom three yet, but they've been drifting closer and closer.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely huge because they've not won at home in what feels like an age. And finally, they've got that win. Obviously, they've got it over a direct, you know, relegation candidate as well. And yeah, I mean, I was really impressed by Muriqi, who came in for his debut. Obviously, he joined the club from Lazio. And, you know, we kind of knew that he wasn't going to be the best on the ball. He wasn't going to, you know, play brilliant football. But his stats from the game, you know, kind of reflect that, you know, while he's not going to be playing these passes, he's just incredibly effective. So he contested 22 aerial duels in that game and won 15, which is the most of any La Liga player this season in his first game. You know, he was literally throwing defenders to one side, you know, at a certain point. So I think he could really make a big difference down there. He gives them something of a focal point to aim at. But yeah, that's, you know, that result has kind of put a bit of a gap between them and Cadiz. So I think there is a chance now that Mallorca stay up. But, you know, they do need to start stringing together some victories because, as we just said, they're not consistent enough at all at this level, unfortunately, at the moment.
Yeah, and of course, Muriqi, the first Kosovan goal scorer in La Liga history as well. So a big landmark moment there. So just kind of speaking about goal scorers, Alaves, Joselu, obviously, is their leading man who scores, it seems like, all of their goals. But there was a little bit of controversy in their game against Elche because José Luis Mendilibar took him off with the score level at 1-1. Obviously, Elche then went on to win 3-1. What did you make of that decision and Mendilibar's management of that game?
Yeah, obviously, it's an interesting decision because, as you just said, José Luis, I mean, he has 11 of their 17 La Liga goals this season. So that's a ridiculous amount of goals to be scoring. And the second highest goal scorer in that team is Victor Laguardia with 2, who's a centre-back. So they definitely have a problem up front. And Joselu is a man who is grabbing all the goals. So it was an interesting decision. You were saying before we went on air that, you know, there's people that are close to Alaves who are calling for Mendilibar out, which I think is an interesting take, simply because I don't know who they go for at this point if they do get rid of Mendilibar. Obviously, he has La Liga experience. He kept Eibar up in you know, in Primera for 6 or 7 seasons, I think it was. So he is, you know, while results haven't been brilliant of late, I think he is, you know, the man that they need. And they just need good consistency at the moment. And I don't think changing it around now at this late stage is going to help them at all. So, yeah, they you know, the big game to lose against Elche. They really, really need to rally around Mendilibar now. And, yeah, as you said, interesting decision, but I think, you know, there were other problems in that game, apart from Joselu, which ultimately lost him the game.
Yeah, well, I mean, his first 5 games haven't been easy, have they? 2 points from those 5 games, but they were up against Real Sociedad, Athletic Club, Real Betis and Barcelona. So, I mean, it's hard to ask for too much from Mendilibar in that one. But then, obviously, this defeat to Elche has been a big blow. And we spoke to Keith Farnan about the Elche side of things and how big a win that was for Francisco and his team. So let's tune into that after a little bit of the commentary from Pere Milla's first goal of the game. To be polite. El centro a la frontal. Pere Milla, qué golazo! Qué golazo! Oh,
hola. Vaya gol, extraordinario.
Gol del Elche. Otra vez Pere Milla. Mojica es un puñal por banda izquierda. ¿Cómo llegó? Como le dio tiempo a levantar la cabeza y en vez de centrarla, el pase raseado a la frontal para que Pere Milla buscando
el... And so I'm joined by Keith Farnan, an Elche fan who's here to discuss the game with us. Keith, a big win for Elche after going behind. I mean, how do you feel after that one?
Yeah, I think it was an incredible result for us. Particularly, we've had a couple of decent results in the past few weeks, and obviously we've had those really tight games with Real Madrid and all that kind of thing. But Alaves at home, it's a game you need to win because losing to a Real Madrid or a Villarreal it will hurt you in not getting the points, but it won't hurt you as in they'll be gaining ground on you. Whereas if we had to lose to Alaves, well, they'd be a lot closer to us, you know. It's a case of pushing us away from them.
Which yeah, and is that the start as well. The start with the goal disallowed inside 30 seconds and Alaves going and scoring to make it 1-0. I mean, were you fearing the worst at that point?
I'll be completely honest. For the longest time, I have felt when those kind of things have happened, it was it was inevitable we were going to break down. Like, the goal being this loud, I think it was probably a fair enough decision. You know, I don't think it was intentional, but it's a fair enough decision. It's a foul. And then such an awful goal to concede, just several defensive lapses. And it's just a case of when that has happened in the past, it has always, particularly in the last maybe 6 months, has really just kind of deflated the team. But I just felt, even after the goal, we just kept plugging away and plugging away. And it always kind of felt like a case of when we were going to equalise rather than if. And obviously, just straight after halftime, we did get that goal.
Yeah, and obviously the last six games puts Elche sixth in the form table. I mean, Francisco has really turned things around. I mean, what kind of impact has he had since his arrival?
Yeah, well, look, I've been on this podcast many times, and people will know me for my love of Francisco Riba. Honestly, he's, as I say, he's incredible. The stuff he's done for his club is amazing. I was a wee bit sceptical about him leaving, but I kind of think it had to be done. But I will freely admit, I was quite worried about what was going to happen. And, you know, is Francisco going to get us going again? And if he didn't, we would have been in quite a lot of trouble. And I know a lot of people will talk about what Kike Sanchez Flores has done at Getafe. I think Francisco's doing maybe not as good a job, but I think definitely close to, because the squad that we've got, realistically, I genuinely don't know anyone, bar Elche fans and maybe one or two people who would be considered just hipsters, predicted us not to go down. You know, it's crazy what is actually being done with the squad at Francisco's disposal. And I think he's just made an incredible impact.
Yeah, I think almost all of the La Liga lowdown squad predicted Elche relegation at the start of the season. So a pleasant surprise for you, at least, if they don't. And I mean, one of the players who's been able to get the most out of has been Pere Mee, obviously, two goals against Alaves, and that's six in his last six. And the last six goals he scored came across 59 games. So quite some pick up in form there. I mean, how impressed were you by him at the weekend and also across the last few weeks where he's had some big goals?
Well, I think Pere Mee, always within our fan base, will be remembered for that absolutely just mind-boggling goal that sent us up in the last seconds against Girona. That was crazy and all that. But I think actually before this, his best ever return, definitely for Elche, was only seven goals. And that was in Segunda División. And to do it, he's now got seven in La Liga. And he's always been a player who works hard, has a bit of technical ability, but he doesn't have that end product. Whereas Francisco's come in and the role he's playing him in is slightly higher up the pitch, allows him to get a lot closer to whoever's playing up top, Lucas Boye or Guido Carrillo, nearly as a second striker playing off them. And he's absolutely thriving in it. And long may it continue, because he is a quality player and he's definitely someone who's very much loved in our fan base.
Okay, so the big question now for you, Keith. 8 points clear of the bottom three at the moment. Are Elche going to stay up?
Well, I said at the start of the season we would stay up comfortably. I think that's a very biased opinion. It still is a biased opinion. But I can never be too sure with the club. But I'm really optimistic at the minute. I really am. We've got a lot of tough fixtures out of the way. You know, played Real Madrid twice. I think we played Villarreal twice. And in the next couple of weeks, I know we have Sevilla soon. I think it's our next game, and we have Barcelona soon. So, you know, I think there's a strong end to the season possible there for us. And if we can keep up this incredible form, then I see no reason why we can't be out of that relegation battle in just a month, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 7 points from the last three, including Villarreal and Real Madrid, isn't a bad one at all. And then Sevilla and Barcelona are both coming up in the next four. So big few weeks for Elche, but fingers crossed we'll be celebrating survival next time we speak, Keith.
Absolutely.
So now moving on to our most valuable player, our MVP of the weekend. Tom, we've got four nominees to select. Who's your first pick?
So the first player I've gone for is Enes Ünal, Hetafe's Turkish striker. He scored a brace on the weekend. That took him up to 9 goals for the season. And all 9 of those goals have actually come under Kike Sanchez Flores. So that's now 9 goals in just under 12 full 90 minutes of football. So it's very, very impressive from them. And his goals against Levante really showed him at his kind of powerful best. I mean, the first goal was an emphatic header from a corner. And then his second was a great turn on the edge of a box and then a really nice finish into the bottom corner. So yeah, really impressive performance. And it's easy to forget that he's only 24 years old. So there's plenty of time for him to improve. I think as Getafe's attacking play that gets better, as I believe it will with the additions of Mayoral and Rodriguez, I think he's going to get more chances and score more goals. So yeah, really encouraging from Ünal, and I'm looking forward to seeing how he links up with Mayoral in particular as the season goes on.
Yeah, so I'm going to go for another guy who got 2 goals this weekend. So we already touched on it with Keith earlier on, but Pere Mia was fantastic. And I mean, he's been the man for the big occasion. And like you said, he's so famous for that goal that sent Elche up into Primera in the playoffs from Segunda. And these 2 goals, again, were potentially just as important to kind of distance Elche from the relegation battle and hopefully secure their status in the top flight for another season. So his recent run of form combined with this performance where he's just so clinical. I mean, the first goal in particular was superbly taken. And I think he's proving to be such a big player for Elche, especially with Lucas Pérez moving on. He's never quite hit the heights that they were hoping for, but Pérez Mia stepped up in the absence of the goal scorer. So he's a big player. What about you, Tom? What's your second choice?
My second choice, I'm going to have to go for someone from that Barcelona-Atleti game, just because it was such a fantastic game. And obviously Barcelona were brilliant on the day. And I'm going to go for Dani Alves, kind of despite that horrific challenge at the end, which deserved a red card and really kind of spoiled the performance. But he scored a brilliant goal. It was a really true strike from the edge of the area. A nicely picked out cross for Jordi Alba's goal. It's just incredible that he managed to, you know, perform like that at the age of 38. You might have seen on La Liga Lowdown, that was 10 years after his last goal against Atleti on the 26th of February in 2012. So it's incredible longevity. Incredible that he's still doing what he's doing at the age of 38. And yeah, as I said, all spoiled by that kind of ugly challenge at the end, but it was a really, really impressive performance from Dani Alves, I thought.
Yeah, I saw a friend, Dan Hilton, from the Barcelona podcast, said that he was on fire in every sense of the word. And I guess that's kind of the perfect description of that Dani Alves performance and his iconic celebration as well. So for my final pick, I'm going to go for Sergio Herrera. I'm sure we're going to touch on him again in a minute when it comes to moment of the week, but that penalty save right at the very death with, 30 seconds left on the clock, kept the point for Osasuna up against Sevilla, and they've struggled for points at times, especially at home lately. So to pick up a result against a team like Sevilla, and Herrera was at the heart of that. I mean, I think he made 4 saves all within the box, 1.44 expected goals that he denied. So I think he can be really proud of his performance, and Osasuna have lost a little bit of that defensive strength this season, but Herrera has stepped up and kind of been the guy who's always there to save them when they need it. And against Sevilla, he did that again. I think he's got to be one of the most underrated goalkeepers in La Liga this season, because time and time again, he pops up and produces a magnificent display like that one. And so there's our 4. So we've got Sergio Herrera, Enes Ünal, Dani Alves and Pere Mia. Keep an eye on La Liga Lowdown on Twitter to make sure you get your votes in and cast your vote for the MVP for this week. So now, Tom, let's move on to our moment of the week to finish up. What was your moment of the week?
Probably a bit biased, as I, you know, come from a bit of a Villarreal persuasion, but I'm going to go for Etienne Capoue's goal against Real Betis to seal 3 points out of Benito Villamarin. As we said earlier, it's just an incredible result for Villarreal, you know, the form that Betis were in. Also with Real Sociedad, Atletico Madrid all dropping points, obviously Betis as well because of this game. It really drags them back into the top 6 race and, you know, maybe even a top 4 race if the end of the season goes well. But it was a really, really excellent goal to cap off a fine display. Really nice finish. He just opens his body up and side foots into the top corner. And yeah, I mean, what a signing he's turned out to be. He's a 32-year-old midfielder for around €2 million. He wasn't expected to come in and kind of play as well as he has, but he's been absolutely brilliant since day one. So yeah, I'm going to go for that, for Etienne Capoue.
Great. Well, I'm going to have to overrule you, I think, because I know you have your Villarreal love, but I think for me, the most important moment of the weekend was Sergio Herrera's penalty stop against Sevilla. I mean, it means that Sevilla are now 6 points off Real Madrid, which there's 16 games to go. A lot can happen in that time, but that feels like a big gap with the way Real Madrid are playing and grinding out results, even missing players like Karim Benzema, Casemiro, and so on. And you just wonder how Sevilla bounced back from that. I mean, the results of late haven't been that great. Obviously, they've been missing some key players. Julen Lopetegui was out with COVID, but he's back now. But Sevilla just seemed to be falling apart a little bit, and that penalty save could have been a turning point. I mean, it reminded me a lot of the Atletico Elche game towards the end of last season, where Jan Oblak made that last gasp penalty save, and that was what kind of kicked Atleti on to win the title. You wonder if this time it's the opposite, that it's a penalty save which ends Sevilla's title hope. So I think in terms of the importance for the season, that's what we have to go out on. So thank you very much, Tom, for joining us and standing in this week.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. It's been great.
And so let's listen to that commentary from that last gasp action on Saturday night to see us out. Make sure you stay tuned to La Liga Lowdown for all the coverage of the Copa del Rey semi-final first legs coming up soon and all the action ahead of next weekend.
Nada, según el añadido, medio minuto, pero tiene que añadir. Claro.
Señoras y señores, descuento del partido. Un penalti que vale una pelea por la Liga. Herrera entre palos. Rakitic detrás de la pelota. Va el Sevilla a por la Liga. Rakitic lo ha parado Herrera. Rechaza el Papu. Lo ha parado Herrera.
¡Hala tú!
Doble parada del portero de Osasuna. ¿Para dónde Herrera? El penalti de Rakitic y el rechazo en la cabeza del Papu.
Paradón, a lo mejor no va muy ajustado, pero va fuerte pegado. Bueno, no va muy pegado el balón. Es una zona parable.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.